Chapter 28. As a little girl, I'd always dreamed of flying in space, of getting off detritus, of being out there, in the realm of stars and suns, of moons and nebulae. If you'd told me I'd make it, but would someday have to fly through the guts of a giant space worm. Well, let's be honest about the kind of kid I was, I'd have thought that was awesome. The reality was more nerve-wracking than I'd have imagined. I had to turn on the ship's floods, illuminating the hollow tube innards of the beast. According to my sensors, it was still a vacuum in here, and the thing had these strange tendrils hanging down from the walls of the guts, like jellyfish tentacles maybe, only much larger. Waving in the vacuum, reaching toward the center of the passage from all directions. All told, the throat of the thing was 12 meters wide, but those tendrils were 3 meters long, thick as rope, and left me with alarmingly little space to fly without touching them. In fact, I clipped one as I tried to keep a bead on Braid's boosters glowing in the darkness beyond. As soon as I touched the tendril, my shield went down, a red warning light blinking on my dash. Scud! That tentacle had drained the shield. Seemed like cytonic energy wasn't the only thing these worms fed on. If the tentacle could slurp down a shield, then what would it do if it touched the ship? I decided not to find out, and slowed, weaving through the strange worm guts more carefully. Fortunately, Braid had slowed as well. Maybe I'd gotten lucky and she'd had her own shield drained, too. I watched closely, and saw her get dangerously close to one of the tentacles. Close enough that her shield should have reacted, but it didn't. I put my thumb back on the destructor button, but didn't press it. "Braid," I said, "I've got you. Yield." She snickered. "Yield? What is this, an Errol Flynn movie?"
"A what?"
"Old Earth," she said. "Actor." This was the first time I'd heard her reference anything from Earth popular culture, not merely Earth history. She'd been raised by human parents for part of her youth. Unless that had been a lie. Had they watched Earth films? "Braid," I said to her, "I'm on your tail and your shield is down. I can shoot you. So why don't you?" "I..." "What really happened to you in the nowhere?" she asked me. "Why do you make the air vibrate when you feel pain? How did you learn to cut through inhibitors? And why are you suddenly so hesitant to fire on your enemy?"
Scud. Was I doing it again?
Holding back because I wanted her to be something that she wasn't? Or was this a lingering effect of having been among the broadsiders, of learning to fight worthy opponents without killing? I wasn't in the nowhere any longer, and last time I'd tried to trust this person, she'd betrayed me. I pushed the button, sending twin streams of destructor fire straight toward her. Braid chuckled, dodging in a spin, barely evading my shots, which hit some of the tentacles. They absorbed the energy, and suddenly, all of the nearby green jellyfish strands started to tremble and whip, making them far, far more difficult to avoid. I threw my ship into a sequence of dodges, speeding up, despite how dangerous it was. Braid laughed even harder as she increased her speed, and both of us were forced to boost forward, spinning and weaving as tentacles started trying to grab us. I narrowly avoided a sequence of them before bursting back into open space, out through the worm's butt, which was open like the front. This was not the glorious image of a starfighter pilot I'd always imagined for myself. Sweat running down my face, I broke right, trying to quiet my heart. In the rush, I'd caught up with Braid, and we'd burst out of the worm at the same moment. Now Braid, denying me time to reignite my shield, managed to get me in her sights. She filled the space with destructor fire. I was forced to dive down, spinning, but behind me the worm turned and followed us, moving faster than the other one had. Somehow it picked up enough speed to keep pace with us. Scud, how was that even possible? I supposed it had seen me as mere space debris before. Now I was prey, and Braid had thoroughly tricked me into alerting it to that fact.
Shoot another worm, she suggested over the comm. Make this interesting.
Shut up, I growled. She laughed again. But then she did something, and the worm suddenly cut off the chase, undulating in the other direction. I frowned, watching on the proximity monitor but not daring to look back. What?
Use your IMP, she said. The blasts hit with a frequency the things don't like.
Thanks, I said. I suppose. Her destructor fire around my ship trailed off. Maybe she was luring me into complacency. But why call off the worm in that case? Scud, I had no idea how to read this woman.
So, do you want to yield?
She asked.
Not a chance.
Good, she said.
Reignite shields and go another round. Winzik is preparing ships to come after us, but we might have enough time for one more go.
I soared back toward the derelict Evensong. There, I put a building between myself and her and cautiously stopped. I didn't reignite yet, in case she was waiting for me to be vulnerable and attack. She didn't. She stopped her own ship in the air and started the process, so I pulled the lever to start my shield ignition as well. It would take around 30 seconds.
So what is it? She asked. That strange distortion around you. The mess you make of inhibitor fields. What really happened, Spencer?
Ah, so that was what this was about. Let me out, duel with me, get me talking. Braid was confused by my new powers, and she wanted them for herself. Now that I understood, a lot of things made sense. Was this some calculated plan with Winzik to figure out my secrets? And Scud, how could I use this knowledge against her?
I don't think I can explain it, I said, testing my theory. Indeed, she didn't come after me as our shields rose. No other ships left Brez, despite Braid's warning. She was here to talk, not duel. This fight was an illusion. Had I finally figured out one of Braid's traps before she sprang it? Can you try? Braid asked.
I feel lost sometimes with my powers. That there's so much to learn, so much to understand, and that I'll never understand myself until I do.
Scud, she was a good actor. There was real emotion behind those words, and I was impressed, despite myself. Even knowing what she was doing, it almost worked. If I was right, then I had no way to escape. She probably had a dozen ships watching, ready to hyperjump in and attack me the moment something went wrong. I couldn't run, but maybe I could stall until my powers returned. So I talked, knowing full well that I was playing a dangerous game.
You'd have to go into the nowhere, Braid, I said. Completely. Not just with your senses. Step into a portal and seek something called the Path of Elders.
You just made that up.
Technically, Chet had made it up, so I was confident I wasn't giving her anything too valuable.
No, I didn't, I said.
I visited special sites around the Belt of the Nowhere. They gave me visions of the past, helped me learn, helped me grow into my powers.
And the Delvers?
I brought one with me, I said. When I was in there, it approached me. You remember that one at Starsight? The one you summoned and I drove off?
Yeah, I remember.
It came to me, in a human form. It traveled with me, tried to understand me, befriended me.
Well, that's creepy.
I stopped myself from saying more. I was straying too close to the truth.
Spencer? She asked.
It's difficult to explain, like I said, I told her.
Just keep talking.
I leaped through that portal on Starsight and didn't know what to expect. I ended up in a jungle and...
The Delver, Braid interrupted. The one that traveled with you.
Scrud, that's what I felt. It melded with you somehow, didn't it?
That's how you cut through inhibitor fields. That's what's going on. You've captured one? Or made a treaty with it?
Scud, I didn't answer.
Hell, Braid said. And that's why they're afraid of you, isn't it? Something to do with that bond. I knew I felt something familiar about you.
I understand them, I said to her, in a way no person ever has before, Braid. You're not going to be able to control them, I can promise you that. You're mistaken if you think you can. Help me escape. Together, we could really figure out the Delvers and maybe make the galaxy safe from them forever.
Huh, Braid said.
Yeah, not interested.
All right, guys, that's probably all we'll get today. Come on in.
I jumped, despite myself, as 24 starfighters appeared around me in a tight formation. I boosted away immediately, but Braid just hit the kill switch on my ship, shutting down the boosters. One of the other ships flew after me and grabbed my ship with a light lance tow cable. I felt like an idiot. This time I'd anticipated her, even managed to figure out her ploy. But still, she beat me. I pounded my controls as Braid edged her ship up to mine.
Technically, I didn't use my powers against you, she noted. So, if it matters, I kept my word.
You killed my ship in space, I shouted at her.
I saved you, she said, from being annihilated by all the other ships that arrived to destroy you. You took too long, Spensa. I warned you that if you did, the fight would be joined by others.
I leaned back in my seat, frustrated.
Did you really think that we'd just be able to come out here and duel? She asked, sounding amused. If this wasn't a setup, the two of us would have been swarmed moments after leaving the station. What now, boss? Someone said over the line. Now we haul her back and toss her in the cell, Braid said. And I figure out how to bond with a Delver, like she has.
I seethed. I'm going to kill you, Braid, I whispered into the comm. Someday, I'm going to stand above you with a sword at your neck, and you're going to beg, and... She chuckled. Then the light on my comm flashed off, indicating she'd cut the line. I pounded the controls again, growling. But the ship wasn't to blame for any of this. I was. Me and my foolishness. Why was I so willing to be caught by her? Why did I play into her games? Even still, a part of me wanted so badly to befriend her. Why? Because, I thought, she's the one who escaped you. Every other person I'd flown with, from Skyward Flight to the Broadsiders, had eventually come to my side. Hesho had become my co-pilot. Peg had come to respect me. Morimer had saved my life. Jorgen had become my scudding boyfriend. Braid was the exception, the only flightmate who had turned against me. A part of me smarted with pain at that, in a way that few other pains could rival. Beyond that, I saw something in her that I wanted to save, a representation of what humans had suffered at the hands of the superiority. I wanted so desperately to make up for that, to protect her, to show her that life could be better. However, she didn't need or want rescuing. I had to remind myself of that time and time again. But at least, I thought as I calmed myself, she hadn't learned anything of actual value. She'd never be able to bond a Delver as I had, because that required empathy she didn't have. We hyperjumped back to the hangar as a group and settled down on the dock. I immediately tried to pop my canopy and run, but they'd remotely locked it up tight. I had one sole hope remaining, that as she'd been playing me, I'd been able to play her a little, because I had wasted time with our conversation. We were close to my next dose. Actually, I thought we were past it. I pushed at the boundaries of my awareness and felt hints of my powers returning.
Here, Chet said inside me. I'm... Here!
I still had a chance, but I couldn't let them stun me. So, as Braid's team came to my ship, I raised my hands and bowed my head, eyes closed. I tried to project a non-threatening air. Her team popped the canopy of my ship. These weren't the same guards that shot me each day. These were fighter pilots. They seemed to mostly be Tanasi, like Peg. They assumed that holding me at gunpoint was good enough.
You grow Maluns, one of them said. I respect that. Out of the ship.
I obeyed, and didn't give them any reason to fire on me. I slowly climbed down the ladder they placed, then raised my hands again, trying to look tired as Braid walked over, helmet under her arm.
Thanks, she said, for the intel.
I shrugged, my head bowed.
Tell you what, she said to me. Maybe once I figure out how to do what you've done, then we can plan about what to do about the Delvers. Together.
I just growled in response, trying not to seem too docile. But then, as she turned away, I let my shoulders slump. She had won this little contest of wits. Even if I'd figured her out, she'd gotten what she'd wanted. That had to make her feel good, right? Like her plan had turned out perfectly. Nearby, a Varvax doctor was waiting with my twice-daily dose. She trotted over, and I tried an emergency hyperjump. Nothing happened. I felt so close to being able to escape this bind, but that was still a few minutes off. It was agonizing to realize my chance was going to slip away. The doctor took my arm, but at that moment, the universe finally threw me a scudding bone, because the doors to the hangar opened, surprising Braid, who spun. Winzik, with a complement of guards, strode in.
"What have you been doing, Braid?" he demanded. "I didn't authorize this."
Everybody in the room froze, including the doctor. If Braid hadn't cleared her stunt with the man in charge, that meant that she hadn't been talking to him earlier, when she'd claimed she was. I still had a chance. I just had to stall a little longer.
"Oh no," I said. "He's found us out, Braid. Quick, what do we do?"
Chapter 29.
Braid stared at me, her eyes bulging.
Awesome.
"Run, Braid," I shouted to her. "He knows we've been working together."
"Shut her up,"
Braid snapped, and one of her Tanasi grabbed me and shoved a gag toward my mouth. Winzik stepped forward.
"No, no," he said, waving his hands. "Leave her alone. I will hear her."
"Human, you've been working with Braid, have you?" The Tanasi pilots reluctantly backed away. Most importantly, the doctor joined them.
"Yes," I said, trying to sound reluctant. "Ever since Starsight. We thought maybe we could make you free the humans in the preserves. Find a way we could be warriors again, serving you."
Was that too obvious a lie? I couldn't tell if Winzik was buying it or not. His crab face wasn't exactly capable of the expressions I found common. I did think the way he waved his arms next was a sign of agitation, though.
"My, my," he said.
"She's lying, Winzik," Braid said, rolling her eyes.
"Very clearly."
"Yes, perhaps she is," Winzik said, turning to Braid.
"Perhaps. But what is it I have found you doing? The soldiers in these docks reassigned? A crack team of pilots commandeered? You went and had your little duel with her, didn't you? The one I expressly told you was foolish?"
"I needed to know which of us was better," Braid said.
"You grow unruly," Winzik said, tapping his exosuit's hands together. "You no longer give me the deference you once did. You think that because you are Cytonic, I need you."
"You do not speak now," Winzik said.
"You will be confined to quarters."
Braid deflated visibly. Fine. Now, so long as that doctor stayed away. I could feel my power seeping back. I was so close. Chet was growing increasingly clear, his soul vibrating with mine. I strained and felt something in the distance, a familiar mind. Embot? He seemed to perk up, and I felt his excitement at sensing me, but I couldn't get any words through. I tried to send him panic, a feeling that I was captured. I got the slightest impression of something in return, an acknowledgement, and a sense of something powerful. Defiance. Just a few more minutes. I kept my own head bowed, barely daring to look up to watch.
confined to quarters? Braid said. Fine, I'll do it.
Now, I think this entire fiasco needs to change direction, Winzik said. My, my. I should not have listened to your aggressive instincts, Braid. We leave our worlds undefended by gathering this force of ships as you have suggested.
Braid looked up sharply.
We should be waiting out the humans, not preparing to confront them, Winzik continued. I have control of the entire superiority and all of its strength. We will disperse this fleet and send the ships back to maintain control on the most important planets. Then we will wait for the humans to starve themselves. Yes. Yes, this is the proper way.
Winzik, Braid said.
Don't ruin.
Ah!
But you don't speak right now, he chided her. Remember? You are too like these other humans. They are of lesser intelligence, as are you. I see that they will chew themselves up, just as you have been unable to resist fighting this human. We can let them be, in turmoil, then clean up the mess and document it, so that all will see that I have defeated them. Yes. Let us begin.
He turned and started toward the door. Braid let out a long, annoyed sigh. Then she raised her sidearm pistol and blasted a hole in Winzik's head. Shocked, I watched his exosuit fall to the ground with a calamitous crash. I stared, then looked up, expecting the soldiers in the room to immediately attack Braid. No one moved. Even the other Varvax aides who had entered with Winzik just waved their hands in faint agitation.
Well, that's over, Braid said,
sliding her gun back into her holster.
What are the latest reports on Detritus's troop movements?
A Varvax hurried over, holding up a data pad for Braid.
Continued consolidation from the planets Evershore and Redon, sir. They're building up their own fleet.
And our troops? She asked.
Winzik's orders have produced lethargic responses, the aide admitted. It could, should be going much more quickly.
Braid sighed.
Probably should have shot him sooner.
Perhaps, sir, the Varvax admitted.
Wait, I said, my utter confusion breaking through my good sense. Wait. You're just going to let her get away with shooting your leader?
The reptilian Tanasi next to me chuckled.
What? He asked. You think we would band together behind that?
He gestured to Winzik's fallen husk. Horrifyingly, I realized that the crab thing inside the helmet wasn't dead. The liquid was leaking from the shattered faceplate all over the floor, and the much smaller creature that was Winzik was crawling out of its remnants, moving in jerks. His crustacean mouth gasped for breath. He was suffocating in the air.
A bureaucrat? Another of the soldiers asked. You really think a bureaucrat orchestrated the conquest of the entire superiority? We weren't going to follow a leader who couldn't tell a flanking maneuver from a feint.
We needed a military leader, one of the Varvax aides said.
We needed,
the Tanasi next to me growled,
a human.
Stars and saints above, everyone in this room had been working behind the scenes with Braid for years, each of them knowing all along that Winzik was a puppet. I looked back to Braid, who was going over battle reports and quietly giving orders. Scud, this was the real Braid, wasn't it? All this time, all these false faces, and this was who she was. A conqueror, hiding in plain sight among her enemies. Despite everything, I couldn't help but be impressed.
Give the order to gather our forces, she said to the aide. Quickly, this time. Inform the command staff that I've finally executed our contingency. I suspect a lot of them will be happy to hear it.
Yes, sir,
the aide said, tucking away his data pad.
We'll need to start the propaganda machine immediately.
The planets could accept Winzik as their war minister, but a human is going to be more difficult to spin. I'll wear the hologram in public until you manage the situation, Braid said, waving them off.
As the aides left, she strolled over to a workstation and picked up a large crowbar that she, to my surprise, absently handed to me. I took it, feeling the heavy weight of the steel in my hands.
For him,
she said, nodding to where Winzik was crawling across the floor. He was trailing what I guessed was blood from several sections of his carapace. It looked like he had been connected to the exosuit biologically. I'd never known if those things were entirely tech or natural growths. I thought maybe they were something in between.
The final blow belongs to you, Spencer, Braid said, for what his people did to yours. An honor, I give you, one soldier to another.
He was slowly making for the door, probably deranged by the lack of liquid to breathe and bleeding out. I gripped the crowbar, then hesitated.
You're just going to record this, I realized. And as soon as you need an excuse for why you're in charge, you'll plaster the video all over the news showing me, a human assassin, killing Winzik.
Damn, Braid said. For once you figured it out.
She slapped her arm, and an illusion snapped into place around her, like the one I'd worn to imitate Alanik. They'd stolen that tech from Embot. The illusion made her look like me.
Fortunately, she said, few know about this tech. Modern holo videos have encrypted metadata to prevent tampering, but it's perfectly easy to fool them if they're genuinely recording what they see.
I had no idea what some of those words meant, but as a guard handed Braid another crowbar, I stepped forward. I figured I could milk this for a few minutes of extra time. But as I saw Winzik suffering, I actually felt a little sorry for him, despite it all. So, I slammed my crowbar down on Winzik's carapace, crushing the life out of him. With that, I finally ended the tyrant who had kept my people imprisoned for years, who had gotten my father killed, who was responsible for so much death. At least a member of the DDF had delivered the final blow, instead of Braid in a disguise. I felt unfulfilled. Not because I felt bad killing him. It had been a mercy, and he certainly deserved an execution, if only for the death of poor Comfort earlier. Winzik had been a thoroughly evil creature. But I couldn't pin the suffering of my people entirely on him. The oppression was systemic in the superiority, not the result of one person's schemes. I'd gotten vengeance on one little part of the machine that had ruined my people's lives, but this wasn't the solution. The solution had to be much, much bigger than one girl with a crowbar.
What now? I asked Braid, looking up from the dead Winzik.
Now, she said, I'm afraid we're going to have to crush your rebellion. Nothing personal. Can't have a rival faction of humans challenging me for control. Our military is proud to have a human at their head, but an entire fleet of them would be problematic.
We could work together, I said, stepping toward her. You don't have to do this.
Of course I don't, Braid said, frowning. Spencer, do you have any idea how long I've been working toward this?
I've been planning it ever since they took me from my family.
Putting things in place, positioning myself. The superiority is an enormous mess. The military understands how tenuous it all is. We lack the strength to control what we have and need to rule through access to hyperslugs. Yet one slip up, and the secrets of hyperdrives would spread through the entire galaxy. The superiority is a stone balanced on a single point, and it's going to fall. We had to take action, and they needed a leader who understands aggression on a level that hasn't been forcibly bred out of her. She waved to herself.
I'm poised to rule everything, and your people could upset all of that.
Our people.
What? Because we're the same race, we should work together?
She smiled,
Have you read any human history, Spencer? We never got along. That's part of what differentiates us from some of the other species. They had world governments early, achieved through excluding those who didn't agree, yes, but they unified. We're simply not good at that.
So it all just continues, I said, mostly to keep her talking at this point, the way it has been.
Spencer, I created this situation, Braid said, and by crushing your rebellion, I'm going to prove that the military was right to support me. Sorry, but I have read human history. I've studied it, learned from the master tacticians of the past.
She frowned, then put her hand on a pouch she wore on her belt. She was looking past me toward, well, Scud, toward the doctor, still standing back there with my dose. My powers fluttered and stuttered, like a person trying to come awake in the morning. I could almost access them. I strained and felt the Delver inside me churning. The air started to warp around me, which made me curse softly. It would give me away.
Can't you stop that?
I thought in anger at the Delver.
No, the thought came back from Chet. No, I need you. Can you control it?
Could I?
Hell, Braid said. Did we give her the full dose?
No dose at all, the doctor said. We were ordered not to touch her.
Give it now, Braid said, scrambling forward and waving toward the troops.
Several of them grabbed me by the arms, and one pulled the crowbar from my hands. The doctor hurried up, preparing the syringe. But before she reached me, klaxons started going off throughout the station, along with red lights, flashing with a panicked urgency.
What? Braid asked.
Major incursion into the local space,
one of the Tanasi soldiers said, reading from an alert monitor on the wall.
An entire planet has hyperjumped into the region.
She trailed off, then looked toward us.
It's detritus.
Chapter 30. My soul vibrated even further. My friends were here. And they were doomed. I wasn't certain why that feeling struck me, but it suddenly seemed overpoweringly potent. I trembled, thinking of the battle to come, and the losses it would inevitably involve. I gasped, barely noticing as someone grabbed me by the arm.
Where is the nearest potential command station? Braid shouted, audible through my haze of pain. Meeting rooms across the hall have access, a soldier replied, pushing open the door out of the docks. Take your pick. Whichever one is closest, Braid said. Get command protocols transferred there, Gavrich. Keo, inform the fleet.
She spun, shaking me by the arm. She pointed at the doctor.
You, get her doped.
My friends are here, Chet thought to me. I need to help them. I need my powers.
Wait. They were my friends, not his.
Our friends? My friends.
He thought the words with force, and the air warped further.
We have to help them. Should we throw her back into her cell?
One of the soldiers asked, slamming me painfully down on the ground as the doctor stepped up. No, Braid said, backing away, watching that doctor through oddly wary eyes.
We might need the Delvers, so I'll want her handy. Just make sure she's gagged, restrained, and drugged.
We can't get drugged again, I thought in an utter panic. Not again, not again. Do something, do something, do something. A needle bit my skin. The injection. I ripped free of my body. It happened in a blinding moment of pain and confusion. The Delver I'd become, the Delver that was part of my soul, ejected. Not just Chet, but me too, as both of us were intertwined. We launched free, exactly like a pilot from a falling ship. I watched as the doctor dosed my body, which went limp. I was scudding outside of myself. Hell, I was a ghost. What have we done? I asked, and noticed with a chill that my body on the floor mouthed the words, its eyes open and staring sightlessly.
"I don't know," Chet said, vibrating from within my soul where we'd mixed. I
looked down. We had a kind of shape. I was glowing, golden white form, with another beside me, overlapping me. Chet, the Delver, like my double. The warping of the air, the random uses of my powers, was this where it had been leading? Had my soul been trying to escape all this time? I managed, with effort, to control some of my panic. Even without Chet, I had a soul like a Delver's. That was what Cytonics were, people who had been mutated over time by radiation coming from the nowhere. We were people who had whatever quality it was that let an AI exist without circuitry. I wasn't dead. Like Embot and the Delvers, I could merely exist outside of a physical housing. Kind of. I could still feel my body as I lay there. I could hear, as if with my own ears. I wasn't completely detached from my body, just partially. Braid eyed my crumpled form on the ground, her hand on the pouch at her side, watching the doctor pull the syringe from my neck. She seemed afraid, legitimately. And why not? That syringe could remove a cytonic's abilities. She was right to be wary of it.
"Done," the doctor said, sounding relieved. "She'll be without her powers for another 2 spans.
"Finally," Braid said. "Come on."
2 guards grabbed me under the arms, and again I could feel it. When I turned my cytonic body to look at Chet at my side, my physical form twitched in that direction. I wasn't certain I could move it more than that. I followed, hovering rather than walking, as they relocated to a room across the hall. A holographic battle map sprang up in the center of the room, displaying the large platform of Evensong, the much smaller observation platform we were on, and that sea of mines I'd seen earlier. I leaned forward and noticed that I could make out something about those mines. Each had a number above it, along with the readings of vitals? Not mines, I realized. It's a huge web of inhibitor stations, each with a slug to keep this region protected from unauthorized hyperjumps. Indeed, detritus, marked in holographic blue and hovering even larger than Evensong, had appeared far beyond the edge of this field of inhibitors. It was too distant to blast the stations directly. We'd learned that slugs working together had a multiplicative effect on their powers, so this number of them could cast an enormous bubble, large even on a planetary scale. There would be no chance for detritus to blow up the inhibitors from the perimeter, at least not without sending in missiles that could easily be shot down in transit. That was basically all I could pick out of the situation, save for the blips that I guessed were those space worms. Nearby, the guards pulled my body over to the wall and handcuffed me in place to a railing.
"Good, great," Braid said. "Watch her. Even in chains, she'll try to escape."
"She seems really limp," one of the guards said, "and her eyes are unfocused. Did that drug do something worse to her than usual?"
"She's faking," Braid said, "trying to get us to think she's insensate. Keep a gun on her."
"Should we stun her?" the guard asked.
Braid regarded me. Personally, I didn't mind either way. I doubted it would do anything to my soul.
"Keep close watch," Braid said, "but no stunning. I might need her able to talk. She's a bargaining chip in more ways than one."
As a soul, I glanced again at Chet. He quivered with concern for my friends and for us.
Scud, what had we just done? Was there any way to get back into my body?
I tried using my powers, and while my mind expanded, I couldn't hyperjump anything. So I couldn't say if I was in a better or worse situation than before.
"This is bad," Chet thought at me, "isn't it?"
He was looking at the battlefield and the view screen.
"Too early to tell," I thought.
though that latent fear lurked inside of me, the worry that this was the end, the final confrontation. Either we defeated Braid's forces now, seizing her slugs here and permanently hamstringing her ability to rule, or we fell. A set of holographic heads appeared at the perimeter of the central hologram, mostly Dione's, but some Tanasi, a couple of avian Heklo, one Varvax.
"Captains," Braid said to the people arrayed before her, "I have instituted our contingency plan and have formally taken control of our military, following the disposal of our puppet. He was about to undermine our military operations, and I couldn't allow him to continue."
"Good riddance," said one of the Dione's. "What are your orders, sir? I think we've been invaded."
Ah, I thought. These are the captains of the fleet she has assembled here, beyond Evensong.
"It's not the ideal moment," Braid said, "as Winzik's slow gathering of our forces this past week means we're without immediate reinforcements. I've sent orders and hope to have access to more ships soon. Still, our fleet is much, much larger than theirs. We should be able to win this. Just don't get close to that battle station planet. They have long-range anti-ship cannons, not to mention a shield network that can withstand bombardment."
"Understood," one of the captains said. "So we make them come to us?"
"The victor of a battlefield," Braid responded, "is often the one who can best use the terrain to her advantage. They're going to have to send in fighters to try to bring down our inhibitor stations, which gives us the advantage. Follow my directions. I'll show you what a human tactician can do, as long promised."
The group of them gave affirmatives as some flustered aides hurried into the room, setting up to help Braid run the battlefield. I circled her, and she didn't seem to be able to see me, so I scoped out the battlefield hologram. Braid was right. Her side had a far superior position and a much larger fighting force. We might be able to match them for starfighters, but they had all those gunships, carriers, and battleships. A true fleet. Chet quivered further, but I told him forcibly, we had our own advantage. Primarily, we had detritus, which was enormous and highly defended with awesome firepower. Braid was right. My friends were going to have to fly in to bring down the inhibitor stations one at a time. Destroy enough of them, and it would let detritus approach. It was a path to victory. If detritus could draw close enough to Evensong to bombard it, we'd be able to, well, we'd be able to destroy all the enemy slugs. My stomach churned at that thought. I wasn't certain Jorgen would authorize so much death, but Braid didn't know that. If detritus could get close, the superiority would have essentially lost the battle.
"Impossible," Chet thought. "It's too difficult."
He had a point. This was a tenuous path to victory for my side. I'd advocated for our forces to come here, but now I saw how dangerous the assault would be. My friends would have to fly inside an enemy inhibitor field. Braid's forces would have cytonic capabilities and we would not. No jumping away if our ships got hit. I doubted many of the enemy starfighters would have hyperslugs. Those were normally reserved for larger ships, but still, we'd be at a huge disadvantage.
"There is a way out," Chet thought to me.
"What?" I asked, eager for anything that could help our side win. Instead, he showed me something. The nowhere. With a wave of his arm, it seemed to be there, a tunnel into oblivion, a place where no time passed. In there, he and I could infinitely delay the arrival of the battle. We would never have to watch our friends die because death and time, place, and self would stop existing. It was seductive. A part of me was horrified I would view it that way, particularly after how far I'd come and everything I'd done. Another part was mesmerized. I'd spent so long learning about the Delvers, and I'd thought I understood what they'd been through. But in that moment, I could feel it. The desire to escape and run away with Chet. It was like what I'd felt when living with the Broadsiders, but magnified 100-fold, because I knew the moment I took this step, everything would stop mattering. There would be no guilt, because guilt simply wouldn't exist. Step through there and I'd never feel pain again. Just the joy of being part of something that was perfect and unchanging. They were in there too. The other Delvers, watching, lurking, waiting. If I joined them, would they leave my people alone? Was that the sacrifice I needed to make?
Spencer, Embot's voice said in my mind.
That brought me back to awareness in a heartbeat, and Chet's tunnel to the nowhere collapsed.
Spencer, are you there?
Embot, I sent him, and my voice had two tones to it, mine and Chet's.
Embot, yes, I'm here, at Evensong. Thank Turing, Embot said. Spencer, I managed to talk to Jorgen, and he talked back. I'm learning so much, growing so much. He was already planning to attack Evensong per your plan. When I told him I'd sensed you, he moved up the attack. Everyone is here. We've come to save you.
It was a rescue operation. They'd brought the entire Scudding planet to get me. Scud. Chet trembled even more. Embot, I sent to him. I'm worried about the Delvers. Braid is keeping them in reserve, but she thinks she can mobilize them to join this battle if needed. We have to do something about that. Embot said.
I still don't know how to use their weakness against them, Spencer. I've been focused on learning to use my powers, to talk to Jorgen and Hugh.
We don't have much time, I said to him. We have to be ready, you and I, to stop them if they join the battle.
The enemy has sent a communications request, sir, one of the Varvax aides said to Braid in the somewhere. And something's changing about the battle station planet.
I turned toward the hologram, where detritus began to transform. The platforms that protected the planet pulling back to make a hole leading toward the surface. Something flew out through that hole, small by comparison to the planet, but large on the scale of ships. A long, wicked-looking ship with sleek fins. A carrier? We had a flagship now? The shipyards that Rig was working on, I thought. He said he'd found a partially finished project in them. The view screen changed to a shot of the imposing ship emerging from within Detritus's ring of protections. A brilliant, wonderful sight. A carrier ship with bays for fighters, aglow with flashing lights, emblazoned along the side in enormous white letters, written in English, was a single word. Defiant. The name of the ship that had carried us to Detritus all those years ago. Another visual winked into existence, a shot of the Defiance Bridge as Braid accepted the communication. There, seated in a captain's chair, was an old woman wearing a crisp white uniform. Milky white eyes. A small figure, yet somehow still strong. Gran Gran. She stood up, holding on to the armrests of the chair.
Superiority forces, she said in a firm voice. I am Captain Rebecca Nightshade of the Starship Defiant. 80 years ago, you drew my people into your war. You obliterated the ship we called home, stole our heritage, and tried to annihilate us. As the last living member of the original Defiance crew, I've been granted my rightful commission as commander of this new vessel. I am of Clan Motor Scops, the people of the engines. You picked a fight with us that we did not want, but then you foolishly failed to exterminate us. And so, we are back. I am back. The blood of my ancestors demands that I seek vengeance upon you. This is your only warning. Return to us the captives you've taken. Turn away from your path of tyranny. Or I will see each and every ship that raises arms against us burned to slag, and your ashes will be abandoned to drift in the eternal expanse of darkness. Forever frozen, without home or memorial, lamented by your kin, never again to hear the voices or feel the touch of those you have loved. I swear it by the stars, the saints, and the souls of 1,000 warriors who have come before me. I will have your blood.
The room fell still, the superiority soldiers and aides all staring at her, slack-jawed.
"Oh, Gran-Gran," I whispered. "That was beautiful."